Hey there, UCR people. Welcome to Assigned Seating, the uncensored radio cinema club, where we sit down and discuss everything from big budget blockbusters to cult classics to sentimental favorites. My name is Steve, and today with me, I am so happy to have the beautiful Miss Dakota right next to me.
Thank you.
Hey,
how are you? I'm great.
She's ready.
Being gorgeous.
She's ready. You've got the face full of makeup. She's ready to go. And what a movie to discuss, you know, with a face full of gorgeousness. Now, for those of you that don't know the movie that we're going to discuss today, we're going back a little bit. We're going to the 80s. We haven't gone back further yet. We will. I think Vera and I are going to go way back for a couple of films eventually. But we're going back to the 80s, referencing an earlier time for a cult classic with this one. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, today Dakota and I are going to be breaking down the amazing Mommy Dearest.
Iconic.
Faye Dunaway is Joan Crawford, a star.
Yes, she is.
A legend and a mother. The illusion of perfection.
Ooh.
What a tagline. Now, this has caused a little bit of a hullabaloo at the offices of Uncensored Radio because I've wanted to do this for a while, but no one has seen this movie except our youngest panelist, Dakota. So talk to me about seeing this movie. When, how, why have you seen this movie?
Okay, so growing up, my dad like loved old movies and stuff. So this was one that was actually like in our house. I remember like I think it was like 5 the first time I saw this, and it was always referenced like our family at any point will be like, "No more wired hangers." Like it's always just been a thing. and I don't know. It's like I don't necessarily like older movies, but like this one I like because it's crazy and like, you know, it's good.
It is. Oh, God, when I first saw this movie as a teenager, I believe, because I used to get babysat on the weekends or spend time at my grandparents on the weekends, and this is a little bit of Australia for you. So we didn't have back in the day typical cable that you guys had. We had one satellite, like satellite channel called Foxtel, yes, which was obviously run by Fox. And that came in like the mid to late 90s. And it was everything. So my grandmother, God rest her soul, got Foxtel. So there was streaming everything for 24 hours a day. Like this was the streaming services back before the streaming services were there. So this is how I got to meet Miss Katrina A. Johnson when she was working on Nickelodeon. This was my Nickelodeon obsession, all that kind of thing. So that's why I trip out now when I talk to Katrina, because I'm like, oh, I used to watch you when I was a baby.
It was all one channel.
Different channels, but it was one service. So it had Nickelodeon, It had like all this stuff, and it had like the classic movies as well. Okay. And this is how I saw this movie, because my grandmother loved old movies. I think we watched Gone with the Wind together. Like, I've lost count. And she was a night owl, so it'd always be on at like 3 o'clock in the morning. You just wake up.
I'm named after Gone with the Wind. My middle name is Scarlett.
Oh, there you go.
My parents were obsessed.
Small world. So that's how I first saw this and then kind of found a little bit more out about Joan Crawford and Faye Dunaway and all that kind of stuff. But this is a very interesting film. Now, if you haven't seen this movie, please check it out. So it is based, let's say very loosely, on an autobiography by Christina Crawford, who was Joan's adopted first child. The legitimacy of, you know, all of the things that happen in this movie are questionable, but it is based on a true story, as we see a lot these days. But let's get started. So to start with, the similarity is quite eerie. Like the makeup process that Faye Dunaway went through to capture Joan is eerie. Like,
that's amazing.
It's eerie. Like, I can't get over how much she looks like her, the vocal cadence and stuff like that, having gone back and watched some, you know, some Joan Crawford movies. It's just, oh, crazy. Yeah, she's crazy. And then even, like, her daughter, like, Christine, like, little Christina, and like, it's, yeah, I don't, they did great job casting this movie.
Definitely.
Not if you ask Faye Dunaway, but, you know, I think Faye might be the problem there, not everyone else. But, oh, she, yeah, she blames this movie for killing her career, but.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this movie got her Razzie Award nominations and stuff like this, and everyone thought that it was like this schlocky, horrible thing, but I think it's amazing. Like, she dominates this movie. Like, anytime she's on screen, she makes you, there's this feeling. You don't know, all right, you know when you've actually been in the room with someone who's legitimately mentally ill and you can't pick what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
That's the feeling I get when Joan's on screen in this movie. I'm like,
for sure.
Oh God, you don't, even though I've seen this movie so many times, I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? Because she betrays that. And even those moments in this film where something happens and there's that snap in her and you see it and you go, oh God, because I've seen it happen in real life. You go, oh, yes. Bitch, run. Run.
Run. It's like she can be perfectly fine and then it's like, oh, I control
it. Someone says the wrong thing in public and you just see it go,
oh,
yeah, oh yes. No, God, don't let anyone leave the house because you're going to die.
You're going to die.
So the movie picks up at a very interesting spot for Joan. So for our younger viewers, Joan Crawford was a huge box office star back in the day. This movie picks up towards the end of, towards the middle / end of her career, where she is a woman of a certain age. And in old Hollywood, that just meant, you know, your career was over, legitimately. She was part of the studio system. It's actually very interesting when you look at it. She was a movie star when movie stars were becoming actors. Like, yeah. There used to be the studio system and they were set up and placed in their roles and all that kind of thing. But this is around this time is where the idea of acting and method acting and all that kind of stuff was coming into play. So she was a dying breed. We see that, even from the very beginning, you can see that she is legitimately a control freak, obsessive, OCD, compulsive. Yeah. All that
even
kind
just
of
like
stuff.
The opening yeah. scene of her scrubbing her arms and, you know,
4 a.m.
scolding hot water. Scolding 4 a.m. Yes.
Scrubbing her face and arms with soap and boiling water before plunging her face into a bowl of witch hazel and ice to close her pores. Like, she has that commitment to, well, she knows the way she looks is the way she makes her money.
Yeah.
Which is not unlike today, except Joan didn't have filters. Joan had, you know, cold and hot water. So she did the best.
I'd be screwed.
Could you imagine getting up at 4 a.m. to do a TikTok and go, all right, hot water, cold water.
Oh, my God. My skin. That would be horrible.
She's got it under control. And then you see when she goes down to inspect the housekeeping, you're like, oh no.
When she moves that plant, you're like, oh, Olga, you better run, bitch. You better run.
Olga, you in danger, girl. You in danger. And you just, even, I love the whole turban. The monogram. Like, that's the thing about this movie. It's gotten so, it got so many bad reviews and everything. It is a beautiful movie. Like, some of the shots, like with her on the staircase, always when she's on the staircase, especially when she gets the baby.
Yes.
When she actually finally acquired, because for those of you that don't know Joan, she went through marriages and had many miscarriages and couldn't conceive on her own. Yeah. couldn't conceive on her own, so she ended up adopting a child, which she wasn't supposed to have, but she got it because she's Joan Crawford. And that shot of her holding Christina and ascending the staircase, it's like something out of an old school horror movie. It's like Dracula taking his victims.
A victim, yes.
Upstairs. You know what I mean? You go, oh, this is the start of something. This is something's going to happen.
It's crazy.
And it is just the beginning. But then anytime they shoot on that staircase, it's like that house. Oh, my God. It's an actual house, too. Like,
is it?
Yeah. Then they rebuilt sets, but they did other shit. Yeah. Gorgeous. Oh, it's like, oh,
it's
wow.
So beautiful.
Why? I know. And that's the part of me that feels like I was born in the wrong era, because I love that kind of 1930s, 40s, 50s, like big staircases. And it's like, oh.
The staircase is like out of this world. I love her room. Like her room, like the quilted like look on the walls. That's like beautiful.
Kind of like an insane asylum, really, isn't it?
Irony.
Get those padded walls, Joan. Get those padded walls.
So ironic.
So we skip forward now a couple of years, and we see that that things are still not great for Joan. She has to downsize. You know, this is the whole thing about, you know, her dying breed. She is used to living a certain way, and that is not conducive to the amount of money she's earning.
Yeah.
But that does not stop Joan from spending. We see Christina's birthday party, which is, I mean, every child would dream of this birthday party.
A carousel? Like
carousel, like a real life carousel. There's animals, there's performers, there's kids everywhere, there's presents, beautiful. There's press. Most importantly, yes. There is press. And we get lovely photo shoots of Christina and her mother when all Christina wants to do is go and play. But Joan makes sure that they get the shot, whatever shot they need.
Picture perfect.
Picture perfect. And, you know, while the cameras are there, everything is fantastic. But you can even in this beginning shot, you can, when these two actors are together, the tension is there. Like that that underlying tension, you're like, oh my God, something's not going to go right. And then once everyone leaves, Joan tells Christina that she's not allowed to keep her birthday present. She gives them away because that's the thing to do. So
she can only pick one.
She can only pick one. So she's allowed to pick one, which, look, you know, if you're the child of an apparent millionaire movie star, it's not the worst thing. She's teaching her charity. So she's teaching her, you know, to give to people that have less and all that kind of stuff.
But I feel like that was more for her own cruel. Image. That was more of course for her own image, other than like teaching her child an actual like good lesson of giving. It just make her look better.
Yeah, this is the start of the disparity. I think they're easing us in very gently to going, oh well, Joan could be okay. Like she could be just trying to, you know, teach her daughter.
Yeah, she did let her keep the bracelet Greg gave her though. As well.
very begrudgingly, didn't she? Because from the get-go, Christina, and this is the thing, from the get-go, Christina's competition.
Yep.
Even as a child. And like it's a very twisted mindset that you are competing
the pool,
for the affections
the pool
of
scene when they're racing.
That's what we're gonna talk about now.
I'm just like, and like this child, like you can obviously tell Christina is like exhausted, and she's like, no, race me again. And it's just, it's crazy. Like competing with a child, like the, it's just not mentally
having
right.
To win, having to win.
Yes.
Because I'm bigger than you. I'm stronger than you.
And I always will be.
Always win. It's like, oh God. It's like, oh, you're a child. Yeah, but look. Again, not the worst lesson for kids to learn, but, you know, it just proves that they are at loggerheads.
Yes.
From the get-go, really. Oh, I'm sure that when Christina was a baby and, like, a toddler, that there was genuine affection, but once the child was beginning to take the attention away from Joan is when the problem happens. Yep. You can see that the birthday party is like, Christina, they're not Joan. And that's the problem. Because Joan is the star. In case we didn't realize.
Always.
Joan is the star. And who can blame, like, Christina obviously at that point idolized her mother, wanted to be her mother. Oops, there's another picture of her just in case you wanted to know. So much so that, you know, she makes the mistake of putting on her makeup so she could look like her mother and accept that just legitimately innocent childhood behavior, pretending to be a movie star like her mother, because that's all she knows. And as she's making her acceptance speech in the mirror, which we've all done, we're all very, very awarded in our own heads. You see the figure of Joan loom up behind her.
Oof.
And then it gets serious.
Oh.
When she takes scissors to Christina's hair and hacks away because she dares to be to touch her stuff, to be vain, to try. Let's be honest, to try and take her place. She gets in there and hacks away.
That's a crazy scene. Like, when that happened, like, you're just like, that poor little girl, like, and, like, I feel like for a lot of little girls, especially, like, in that time, you know, she's trying to be, like, her mom. Like, for me, even as a 28-year-old woman, my hair is kind of my identity. Like, I like to have long hair because it makes me feel feminine. It makes me feel pretty. Like, so for, like, a little girl, like, that's just, that was probably so traumatic.
Especially when she's crying, saying, I have to go to school, and, like, none of that matters. None of that matters to Joan. There's been an infringement, and this is, anytime there's an infringement, it has to go punished, which, you know, makes you question her. She didn't have much. When you go back and do a bit of research on Joan, you understand that she didn't have much of a childhood at all. So she's in her, I guess in her misguided attempt at making her child ready for the world, it just turns into horrible, horrible psychological, physical abuse. It's just like, oh God, the children's services would have children's services would have a field day with this woman. But she was a Hollywood movie star, and this all happened behind closed doors. So it's funny how many kids of these classic stars have stories that are very similar.
Right, and it all went very, so unnoticed, so unpunished.
Well, yeah. Well, these people were untouchable back in the day.
Yeah,
I mean, even more recently, look at Woody Allen. That's the 70s. Like, that's not that far away.
Right,
and he's gone untouched for marrying his own stepdaughter. Like, it's very interesting. It's only like in the last probably 20 or so years that children have this autonomy and people are allowed to, you can get inside their houses, inside their everything with social media. So
It's
very hard to hide stuff like this nowadays. It wouldn't get away with it. But I don't doubt that it probably does happen, because look at Britney.
Yep, exactly.
Like, I get weird vibes like that from the Spears story. Like, this, that'll make a fantastic movie one day.
Right?
Can you imagine it be the sequel to Mummy Dearest? No. Like, southern white trash dominate their daughter.
Oh my gosh.
But Joan is determined to stay relevant, to stay a star, to do the best she can, even if it means, you know, seduction, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
I just love Faye Dunaway with her leg up around her head.
Flexible.
How flexible. Look at those gams. Look at how tight those legs are. I wonder if that's actually her doing that.
I wonder.
That's good flexibility.
Huh.
As a dance teacher, that's great flexibility. I'm very down with that.
That's great.
Joan goes to the studio to pledge her allegiance to Louis B. Mayer and basically gets told that she's box office poison. And when Louis is leaving MGM, what's her gone first? Which brings one of the first classic lines from this movie and classic scenes. Christina!
This was wild.
Bring me the axe. Yes. And Joan goes to town on the beautiful, beautiful rose garden in a full formal dress and makes the kids and the housekeeper help her clean up in the middle of the night. Like, this is a manic episode happening in front of us. Yes. And you get that nighttime was not a good time in the Crawford house. Obviously, she had some demons that came out at nighttime, bring me the axe.
Scene was insane. I'm like, okay.
The eyes, everything. Down. Yeah. She must have done herself some injuries on this shoot, because she physicalizes everything she does as Joan is so physical when she's in these manic episodes. Yeah. She's really swinging that, even if it's a prop axe. If you imagine doing that time and time and time again, she's hacking down that tree and it is over. I mean, I cannot say enough about the child actress that plays Christina, Mara Hobel. She is one of the best kid actors I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Because she stands next to Faye Dunaway and does not fade away. Like, you get... And she can really emote. She can... When she... You know, when kids cry in movies, you're like... Okay.
It's yeah. No, yeah. She does a really
this
good
is
job.
Real. This is real. And it gets even more real because you forget how back-to-back these scenes are. I was like, okay, right? Because Joan is who's on the source again at nighttime, wanders in to inspect her children, as she does. Now, there's not a lot said about Christopher, but poor Christopher, I don't know, he must have been a active night child. And this is actually documented that he was strapped into bed at nighttime. He was, like, he even says it himself, he was leather strapped to a bed every night so he wouldn't wander.
I think with Christopher, I feel like so with Christina, other than when she was a baby, she only had one little actress, but like Christopher, like they like changed his like three times and I'm like, they did not expect us to notice. Like at one point he's taller than Christina.
Yeah. I guess it's hard to, because Christina was that actress was a certain age and Christopher was, you know, Christopher did come after Christina. He was adopted later. I guess when Joan decided that, you know, she could handle two at once. God knows why.
Good enough.
So as she's with peaceful scene of her inspecting her children's bedroom, where she wanders into the wardrobe and discovers the biggest infraction of them all.
Yes.
And you've got to say it with me if you know it, people. No,
I live.
Oh God, she look at that face.
Oh,
that's a demon. That's a demon.
That is.
So Christina has made the mistake of hanging her dresses on wire hangers. The beautiful dresses that Joan pays for, she treats them like crap. Joan loses her mind in an iconic way. Everything in that wardrobe is thrown out, destroyed. Christina then cops a flogging with the wire hanger. Well, like, look, you can tell that she's not actually hitting the kid, but
it's probably the
vocalization and everything. Like, you imagine how hard that would be for a kid to imagine being hit by a hanger and react to it. Like, that's why I'm like, I give this little girl a lot of credit. She's very, very good. And then her hiding from her mother. Then she loses it and goes into the bathroom and sees dirty floors. We don't know. Like, and that's where I feel when they go into the bathroom, that's where it's a little bit heartbreaking on both accounts. Because Christina's legitimately upset. She's crying. She's like, "Mommy, I don't see it. It's clean. I don't see it."
Right.
And all Joan can see. That's all Joan can see. You know, that's what that. I feel sorry for Joan there as well, because Christina doesn't understand.
Clearly, she's, Joan like, has OCD. Still, like,
and Joan, well, she has some kind of trauma. Like, you know what I mean? There's trauma related there, and that's all that Joan can see is that everything is unclean, everything is dirty, and imagine living your life that way. Like, she's one of the most famous people in the world at this point, and nothing is ever right / good enough / she obviously, this is her trying to keep control as best she can, because she can't control her career, she can't control what people think of her, what the box office says about her performances. But she can control what happens in this house, and she can control everything staying clean and organized, and that these kids will not step out of line. They will be good children, quote unquote. That kind of breaks my heart a little bit, that scene. I'm like, oh, that's, yeah.
It's sad because I feel the movie doesn't ever showcase the kids being like bad kids. So
no,
it's just minor like kid things. Like, and it's so sad that, you know, she was in her head. She just couldn't like process like dirt for her. But like, it is sad.
And then nothing at this point. The public don't see that because they are exploited at every stand, even at Christmas again. The radio comes in. We will have a happy Christmas. This is what Christmas looks like. This is what a happy family looks like at Christmas. I am in control. I'm Joan Crawford. Everything's perfect. You'll notice that, you know, the plastic covers are off the couches here. Because Joan kept everything in plastic, but, you know.
Everybody looks perfect.
When the media came around, we can take the plastic off. Briefly. This is a big turning point, though, the no wire hangers scene. I think, obviously, for Christina, it was a huge moment in her relationship with her mother. But even in this movie, it is a huge moment because this is the end of Christina's childhood, whatever little childhood there was for Christina, because she is shipped off. She's going to boarding school now, because especially as she is entering those teenage years, those preteen years, Joan can't or won't have her around. She's gone. You know what I mean? She has to go. Not a younger, famous, you know, she was famous by association. People knew who Christina Crawford was. They wanted photos of her.
She didn't want the competition.
And her mother, not Joan and her daughter, which is a big, big thing. So she's shipped off to the Chadwick School, which is a girls' school. Oh. Meanwhile, Joan's busy living her life, you know, until Christina is caught kissing a boy.
Necking. Now,
in reality, Christina implies that she actually lost her virginity at this point, and she was a lot younger.
Oh, wow.
Than what the movie portrays it as. Yes. So if you read the book, it's a very
Did you read the book?
I read it ages and ages ago. The details are very spotty, but yeah, you can see where they've taken stuff from this book and just amplified it for a movie, but still. still. Ugh. It's very disturbing. Yeah. So I understand if my, you know, what, 13/14-year-old daughter was at a girls' school and was having sex, I'd be a little bit upset.
Yeah, I'd be upset about that too.
This is where we see the dynamic change in a big way. Christina is now played by Diana Scarwid, and she is the perfect foil for Joan. She doesn't take it when Joan picks her up from that school and her hip flask runs out. She doesn't waste time. She, there's a liquor store on the corner.
It's yep. Like, oh. I love that.
You're like, oh shit, it's I'm on. Like, it's
a... I'm like, ooh.
Yep. It's on those moments. And then of course Joan's like, of course she'd know where to find the booze and the boys. You're like, oh, you are the bomb. And again, this leads to one of the most iconic scenes in this movie. They return home where Red Book reporter / editor Barbara Bennett is doing a piece on Joan. So she's in the house. You forget that this is how much access that reporters used to have. They would just show up to celebrities' homes and they'd go, yes, come in. This is my life. Like, whereas now, I think especially your generation would be so used to people going, no reporters, go away.
No comment.
Paparazzi, paparazzi. Yeah. No comment when that's not what it used to be like. The studio would organize for the reporter to come in and you would showcase your life so everyone could see how picture perfect it was.
It seems like such a like an invasion of privacy.
Yeah, but that's the movie stars didn't have privacy, but we didn't. Movie stars also didn't have private lives back in the day that we saw. It all happened behind closed doors. Iconic, iconic scenes with adult Christina, or nearly adult Christina and adult Joan. The slap.
Oof.
Look at the eyes. Look at the eyes. Crazy. I think she actually hit her too. I would have to look into that, into the production.
Oh, wow. But
she does not back down. She does not back down at all.
Why I don't blame her.
Why did you adopt me? And you can see the venom. You can hear it. Christina's done.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, and then all fucking hell breaks loose. She goes to town and strangles, like literally strangles her.
Oof.
You loved it when I hit you. You love it when I hit you, don't you? It's like, oh God, you are terrifying. Especially for Joan would have had to be, look, 50-ish at this point.
Oh, okay.
In reality, so imagine someone's mum going and just rearing up, throwing her on the ground, and this is apparently quite true to the situation. This happened. Barbara, please, Barbara. I just love it. Barbara, please, Barbara.
Joan was not used to Christina standing up for herself, so,
and especially for it to the biggest infractions that happened
when Barbara was there was here. Yes.
When the veneer had well and truly slipped and people had seen it, and she loses it. You know what I mean? She loses it because the mask is pulled away. Well and truly, she is gone.
I was actually surprised that Joan didn't, because when Joan lied and said Christina had been expelled, which she had only been put on probation, but Joan yanked her out. Like, I was surprised she even said that. Like, because that looks like a movie star's daughter gets expelled. Like, that doesn't seem like a good headline.
But this is the thing. Barbara was focusing on Christina and how beautiful Christina was and how big she'd gotten. So Joan, right. Joan had to bring it about a peg. It wasn't anything I did. She did something horrible. And needs to be punished.
No, yeah, God. You're right.
Yeah, it's jealousy. It's weirdly like sibling rivalry.
Yeah, very much so.
Like that's what it is. It's just so much. There's so much to unpack in the treatment of her daughter. That, you know, yeah. Oh God. But from here, it gets worse for Christina because she becomes persona non grata. She is sent to the Flint Ridge Sacred Heart Academy to be raised by nuns, where she was allowed. And this is true. This is true. And I've listened to a couple of podcasts and read a couple of things. This was the glamorous version of this. She was only allowed one dress and one pair of shoes per year.
What?
Yep. So Christina Crawford, the child of a movie star, was where everyone else got to, you know, go to bed and all that kind of stuff and go home on the holidays. Christina was the one actually at the convent scrubbing floors, cooking meals, doing all that stuff. Joan informed the sisters that she was not to be treated any differently than anyone else who was there as a ward of the state, you know, as someone's forgotten child. Right. So that's how she was treated. And she was actually lucky that the nuns did take a little bit of sympathy for her. She was allowed one coat, one dress, one pair of shoes.
Wow.
So when that stuff wore away in the middle of winter and Christina was freezing, the nuns were actually, you know, Christian or Catholic and gave her stuff that she needed. In this time, however, Joan was not schlepping on the matter. Joan, in her she's wily. She's got a good self-preservation instinct.
Yeah.
Meets and marries Alfred Steele, the CEO of Pepsi Cola, who just happens to be quite wealthy. Well, it appeared that he was quite wealthy. And Joan loved that for her because she managed to get her lifestyle back. She was able to live the life that she got. But very, very shortly after they were married, Christina was not present at the wedding. She met her father when she was home for a holiday. What should I call it? And even, see, this is the weirdness. Even when she meets him.
Yes, I was like, going to say that.
She's like, what do I call him? Call him anything, what you would call your father. So she calls this, her as a nearly grown woman, calls this grown man that's not her dad, daddy.
Ooh. Yeah, that scene is so cringy. Like, he's in the pool and she walks up and she's like, hi, daddy, I'm Christina. I'm like, it's just like, it's uncomfortable.
I know, it's very sugar baby, isn't it? You're like, oh, I don't enjoy
and
that.
And his expression, he's just like,
he's like, this bitch.
That's what your mom calls me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. And see, that's that weird parallel where she can't be replaced. She can't be replaced by Christina, but that's the way, it's the only way that Joan knows how to interact with men and get what she wants from them.
Yeah.
Is to become this subservient sex object.
Yeah.
Which is really, like, so disturbing.
It is. Again,
that's something we have to unpack for women of a certain age and, you know, their experiences in Hollywood because, Nelly. Nelly, Los Angeles is not the place to go if you're an innocent, especially at this time or any time, I think. Yes. You got to hedge your bets and
hold on to what you
can. It takes a lot to get famous. It takes a lot. Now, as we said, poor Alfred in the round for a long time. Alfred dies and leaves Joan in a very precarious situation as the widow because the board of Pepsi Cola want her gone. But Joan, to her credit, used her movie star ways and what she knew how to do to make Pepsi a success. Because, again, this is something really weird to think of. Pepsi, you know, the brand Pepsi, this huge brand that sponsored the halftime show, you know, was nothing back in the day before Joan Crawford, before she got her hooks in there and did her due diligence and put it on the sets of, like, that was the only thing people could drink on the sets of her movies and vending machines and all this kind of stuff. And she was the face of Pepsi Cola. She went around and did promotion, and this huge Hollywood star drinks Pepsi, is the face of Pepsi. This is what people would do, like the Kardashians. People want to look like the Kardashians. You know, people want to drink what the celebrities drink. Joe Crawford drinks Pepsi Cola. Oh my God, I'll buy Pepsi.
Right.
And it's very strange, especially for Australians, because Pepsi isn't as popular here. Coke is popular here. Coke is the thing here. And
I prefer Coke when I was, over Pepsi.
Yeah, but in America, Pepsi is everywhere. Ugh. Everywhere. Everywhere.
Not a fan.
Joan, look, will not be denied. She'll stay head of this board because, as she says, don't fuck with me, fellas.
Oh, I love that part.
My first time at the rodeo. Mm-hmm. She is a dominating force. She owns 60% of this company, and she will not be denied. Joan stayed on the board of Pepsi and pulled the strings for quite a while. And that's a boss move on Joan's part. You know what I mean? She made sure that she still had her income coming in until she was removed.
Well, because they said they were trying to retire her, and she's like, "Do you know who I am?" Like she would have ruined them. So they're scared.
She would have. She was ready to pull down everything she created. She was done. But the story's still not over at this point. I forgot. This movie is a long movie, but it doesn't feel like it when you watch it. I was like, oh, this is over 2.5 hours. My God. Because we get to see that the Joan Christina story takes a very, and again, bizarre, like amazing twist. Because Christina, and to her, I don't know if it was common sense or weird judgment, becomes an actress and becomes a star of a soap opera.
Yep.
Until she is admitted to hospital with an ovarian tumor. Mm. Guess who swoops in?
That was so shady.
Joan Crawford, who has to be, 50-something, goes on, and this is legit, this happened.
This part did really happen?
100% happened. Joan Crawford, who's 50-something, stood in for her daughter on this soap opera, playing a 22-year-old. She's supposed to be. She's younger in the. I think she's actually young because she's a newlywed in the TV show. I've listened to the podcast. I think this is where there's some disparity in ages and stuff like this.
Yeah,
she and this is where the alcoholism had gotten the better of Joan, and she wasn't used to this style of movie making. Well, it's not even movie making, it's TV, which is something that Joan is definitely not familiar with. The pace of, especially a soap opera, having to learn the lines and get it right because there was no one there with a cue card going, oh, unless you're Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Who had someone with on cue the card. Side of the set with cue cards. Like an old movie star, so she could go, yes, Tom, I'm very upset by that. I would love to see it. Like, I would love to see the actual footage, but because this is back in the day where we didn't save footage and stuff like
that.
A lot of, especially with the soap operas, they would destroy the film or reuse the film. There's some of this stuff is lost to the ages, but God, I would love to have seen Joan trying to play a 20-something version of herself. And it's just crazy.
It was so like she snuck right in there.
Oh, yeah, of course. Any opportunity. Joan's an opportunist if we have learnt nothing else. Miss Crawford knows how to spot an opportunity. But this is kind of where it kind of... I feel like the end of the movie kind of cuts off really briefly. Like, it's like, oh, yeah. Okay, we're done. Because in 1977, Joan herself dies of cancer, which is, you know, very sad.
Mm-hmm.
And Christina and Christopher go to the offices of their lawyer. Now, what we don't see in this movie is that Christina, Joan actually does adopt more children. She adopts a set of twins.
Twins, right, yeah.
So the twins are the children that are partially cared for by the will, but Christina and Christopher are completely disinherited.
Get nothing. And you know why. They know why.
Exactly. They know why. Poor Christopher is heartbroken and says, no matter what happens, she always wins. We pan to Christina and she says, Does she? which led to the publication of the number one bestseller, Mummy Dearest, by Christina Crawford. Now, what a ride this movie is. It is so, like, we've kind of really only hit the high points, but there is so much, especially for a longer, older movie. And I'm not saying the 80s is that long ago, but usually in movies like this, there's downtime when you go, oh, okay, I'll go get something to eat. Da, da, da. I sat there for this entire time going, oh, something's going to happen. Because you know.
Something's always happening.
Like it is, yeah. It's beautifully shot. There's always something happening. You've got to watch how Joan evades, you know, her mental illness or succumbs to it at all points. And yeah, the story of her being a survivor. If you want to know a little bit more about Joan's later years that aren't really covered in this, there is a brilliant, brilliant television show that Ryan Murphy did called Feud, which is another reason, another huge, huge reason why we know the name Joan Crawford, because she starred opposite her late life nemesis, Betty Davis, in an iconic film, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And Feud tells the story of how that movie came about when they were both at presumably the end of their career, and this little tiny horror movie gave these women a whole new lease on life and a whole end of life career, basically. So have you seen Feud, Dakota?
No. Is it good?
If you like this movie, you will love Feud.
Susan Sarandon. I love both of them.
Susan Sarandon plays Betty Davis and Jessica Lange plays Joan Crawford.
I love Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon.
Originally, when I heard the casting, I thought it should be the other way around. I thought Susan should play Joan. But when you see them on screen, you're like, oh no, you got this right. You got this right.
I have to watch it.
And you also, have you ever seen Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
No.
Girl, if you love this movie, you will die. You'll go, oh my God. And that you can see the tension. You can see that Joan is actually a fantastic actress in that movie. And up next to Betty Davis, who was the actor's actor. So she was the new ingenue, and she was competition for Joan, basically, back in the day. And then they both got chucked out at the end of their careers. So they teamed up, even though they hated each other, and created an iconic movie and an iconic feud that you can still read multiple books about to this day, about the feud between Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. Ironically, Betty's daughter, BD, BD, released her own tell-all book about her mother.
It wasn't and
her
bad
experiences. Oh, you might want to check that one out too.
I'm intrigued.
very interesting. This is the thing about this old Hollywood stuff. You peel back one layer, and then there's another, and then there's another, and there's another, and you go in and you find out more and more and more.
Think of all the stuff we'll never even know.
Exactly. And this is the sad thing. All these people are gone now. Their families are slowly going. We're never going to know half of these stories about old Hollywood. Very, very sad. But, Dakota, I have to ask you.
Yes.
How many wire hangers out of 5 are you going to give, Mummy Dearest?
5. I live.
5? All right. Tell me. Give me your end of the movie thoughts.
So, overall, I like crazy because I'm a little crazy. I think it was so beautifully shot, and all the actors and actresses did such a good job, like, really portraying everything, and it keeps you on the end of your seat, like, edge of your seat. Like, it's just so much happens, and, it develops beautifully. I think my only critique is, like, what you said, it does end a little abruptly, which is just kind of like, meh, but, like, overall, it's an amazing movie.
Right. I think that even though it was a Razzie nominated, whatever, you can't escape this performance. The character of Joan is so huge. Oh God, what she, she's so undeniable. And Faye Dunaway just, there's chewing scenery, and then there is, like, dominating the film. And this is a cult classic now, this movie. People love this movie because truth is stranger than fiction. So we're never going to know exactly how close it is.
Right.
Like, we think that it's bizarre, but how many stories do you have in your life where you're like, no, this actually happened?
And right.
These people actually. That shit crazy. This is a solid, again, I think 4.5. I'm going to give it 4.5 wire hangers out of 5. The only thing that I wish, I wish there was a little bit more at the end.
Yeah.
But that their lives kind of did fork away from each other at the end of their life too. So I guess that's why it's not there. But again, if you want to know more about Joan and what she got up to when she kept her ways going, check out Feud, read a book. But until later on, thank you so much for joining me, Miss Dakota, on a beautiful, beautiful assigned seating where, I feel like I need to go plunge my face into some cold water now.
Me too.
Me too. Until next time, folks. Yeah, you never know. You never know what we're going to be talking about, what movie, what genre, anything like that. So, make sure you buy your tickets for next Assigned Seating. We'll see you soon. Bye.